This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. 10 years ago today, Kurt Cobain, co-founder and lead singer of the group Nirvana, apparently committed suicide. His body was not discovered for 3 days. When word of his death got out, fans converged on his house in Seattle, Washington. Thousands more gathered for a spontaneous vigil in the city's downtown. Cobain was one of the most popular rock stars of his day. Nirvana introduced the Seattle sound known as grunge to audiences around the world and made alternative rock mainstream. Just 2.5 years passed between Nirvana's major label debut and Cobain's death. Fans liken its impact on them to the effect that John Lennon's murder had on their parents. Marcy Silman of member station KUOW has this remembrance.
On the rainy morning of April 8, 1994, an electrician coming to install an alarm system at Kurt Cobain's Seattle home stumbled across the rock star's body. Nearby were a shotgun and a note for Cobain's wife, Courtney Love, and their 2-year-old daughter, Frances Bean. Music photographer Charles Peterson had worked with Cobain for 7 years. He got a telephone call with the bad news.
I didn't bother to ask how, because I automatically assumed that it was a drug overdose. And I thought, you can't say that on the air.
Just a month earlier, Cobain had almost killed himself with an overdose of barbiturates. After recovering, he threatened suicide again. Cobain's demons were very real. He suffered from depression and from severe stomach pain that he claimed only heroin could soothe. Seattle journalist and Cobain biographer Charles Cross says Kurt Cobain suffered from another kind of pain. His parents divorced when he was in grade school, and Cobain bounced from home to home until he dropped out of high school. Cross says Cobain turned his experiences into songs.
He had an uncanny ability to take the pain of adolescence, which is not unique to Kurt Cobain. Virtually everyone, even the high school cheerleader, goes through a lot of these same feelings. But he was able to condense that into these songs and these powerful lyrics and these melodies. I mean, he's created a work that forever will be a source of gratification and maybe solace for people going through that stage of life. This is the Catcher in the Rye of rock music.
I'm so lonely, that's okay, shame. Sad, and just maybe I'm to blame for all I've heard. I'm not sure, I'm so excited, I can't wait to meet you there. I don't care, I'm so horny, that's okay, my will is good. Yeah, yeah.
Early on, Nirvana was just another Northwest band. But Sub Pop Records, the label that first recorded Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, and Mudhoney, took a chance on Nirvana, releasing a single called Love Buzz in 1989. Biographer Charles Cross says that by 1990, Kurt Cobain found his voice in a song called Sliver.
Suddenly you have a protagonist, which you don't in the other work. You have a subject to this work. And that subject, from that moment on, was Kurt Cobain. There wasn't a song he wrote after 1990 that wasn't about him in some way or another. He denied it a few times, but if you really go back and look at the themes, they're all real-life songs, and they're all about him or someone in his life.
Mom and Dad went to a show. They dropped me off at Grandpa Joe's. I kicked and screamed, said, please, no.
By the fall of the following year, Nirvana had signed with a major label and released Nevermind. The album smashed all expectations. By January of 1992, Nirvana passed Michael Jackson, U2, and Garth Brooks to land at the top of the Billboard album chart. Charles Cross says the band did it with a simple formula.
Make the verse very quiet and then kick in with a very powerful chorus. And the Beatles didn't have choruses like Nirvana. They didn't have just rock outs and then go to the soft stuff.
Oh,
Within a matter of months, the sound of commercial rock changed. A music industry weighted down by manufactured pop stars converged on Seattle, scrambling to find the next Nirvana. Alternative became mainstream on radio and MTV. The look of rock became flannel shirts and jeans. Like most of their fellow Seattle musicians, Kurt Cobain and his bandmates Chris Novoselic and Dave Grohl shopped at thrift stores. Photographer Charles Peterson.
Considering the amount of money Nirvana made, Kurt probably could have afforded to buy a few better clothes. The only manufacturing that went on was just the machine surrounding them, you know, the management and the tours and the PR and, you know, and I mean, that's got to get to anybody.
Near the end of his life, Kurt Cobain told the BBC that he missed simpler times.
You can't buy happiness. I mean, that made me happy for a little while. But, I mean, I was just probably almost just as happy with going to secondhand stores and stuff like that and finding a little treasure. And that actually meant more to me because it was more of a stab in the dark in a way, you know, because you didn't know if you're going to be able to afford it and you don't know what you're really looking for, and when you find it, it's more special to you rather than, you know, having $1,000 and going into a store like that and just buying the whole store.
Although Cobain often portrayed himself as a victim of his success, biographer Charles Cross says the singer was an ambitious young man who carefully planned for stardom. Cross reads from Cobain's journals, published in 2002.
Punk is musical freedom. It's saying, doing, and playing what you want. Nirvana means freedom from pain and suffering in the external world, exclaims guitarist Kurt Cobain. This is Kurt writing his answers to interviews he hasn't done. And if I'm remembering correctly, this is before he became famous. He is essentially planning what he's going to say when they actually want to talk to him.
Photographer Charles Peterson reads from another journal entry.
The band now has an image, the anti-gluttony, materialism, and consumerism image, which we plan to incorporate into all of our videos. The first one, Smells Like Teen Spirit, will have us walking through a mall throwing thousands of dollars into the air as mallgoers scramble like vultures to collect as much as they can get their hands on. Then we walk into a jewelry store and smash it up in anti-materialist, fueled punk rock violence.
Peterson says he never got to be good friends with Kurt Cobain. The photographer says you couldn't.
He scared me a little bit. I think because he was difficult to understand and kind of shy himself, and that brought out some of my shyness. It's hard to be friends with somebody who's really their only friend is the drug.
Kurt Cobain spent the last moments of his life with that friend and a shotgun. For NPR News, I'm Marcy Silman in Seattle. In the sun.